from KQED.
Welcome back to the Forum Program. I'm Michael Krasny. A year after President Trump's election, more than 300 singers from the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus and the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir embarked on a tour of America's Deep South, seeking to spark conversations about faith and anti-LGBTQ prejudice. The group performed in churches and community centers across five deep red states, where they met both protest and acceptance. And we're going to talk about the singer's journey, which is chronicled in the new documentary, Gay Chorus Deep South. Joining us in studio is Tim Selig. He's artistic director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Welcome, Tim.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And we'll also say good morning to our own Chloe Veltman, who is also with us in studio, reporter for KQED News, and she embedded with the chorus during the tour. Morning,
hi.
Chloe.
Yeah. Hello, Michael.
Hi. Tim, let me begin with you. This would seem, at least on the face of it, to many to be an extraordinarily daring thing to do, courageous thing to do, to go to the Deep South, where churches are known for their, shall we say, homophobia, if not downright adversarial relationship to the LGBTQ community. You're going to tell us about what actually went into the thinking of the decision to go there.
The decision was made in about 3 minutes, actually. It was our 40th anniversary, and the chorus has spent its entire 40 years with activism and music as our two twins, we call them. So we were going to go to China for the 40th anniversary of the chorus. What a great thing. And as when the election happened, we were – obviously that trip was very expensive. And the guys had all signed on and were ready. And our board chair called and said, we don't need to be spending this money to go to China because the state-owned media is going to clamp it down. So we should go to the Deep South. And we immediately said, oh – Well, Beijing is different from Mobile, but
sure. You've noticed those differences, have you?
Slight, actually. We began in Jackson, Mississippi. I shouldn't bash Mobile, but so we went to the guys, and we actually let the news out that we were taking a red state tour, and we immediately backed up on that one because there are 33 of them, and we would have to take a year. So we backed off on that, and then we named it the Lavender Pen Tour. We can talk about that if there's time. But immediately we went to the guys and said, would you pay your own way? Would you pay $1,600 for a beautiful 8 days in the South? And they said, sure, yes, it's important. And that's how the decision was made. And then from there, it was actually 11 months later that we took this massive tour of 25 performances in 8 days across five states. So that was the thought process, and boy, did it pay off.
Well, there was valor certainly in that, and I commend you for it. I've always been a fan of the chorus. When you said it paid off, why did it pay off?
It paid off in ways that I hope the listeners will seek it out and see it. It was a complete reversal of what we thought. We began by there are chorus members from each of the five states we visited, and we began by researching both large HRC, GLAD, those kinds of organizations that were in the South, and then we started the other side with the grassroots organizations, and we identified at least 25 organizations in each of the five cities that we both gave money to, encouraged, met with, and that was the real – I think one of the things that was a wonderful result because now they're all working together. The other thing was, of course, we live in the San Francisco bubble, and we have an opinion of the South that is less than we should. And we went with that. We went with that thought process of, these poor people, they need our encouragement. And what happened was
– Were you there to convert them maybe too?
No. No, we were not there to recruit you.
I said convert. Not recruit. Convert.
They may have tried to convert
to make them see the light.
There's a little of that, but we did not go with that purpose, not to see the light. We really wanted to encourage, uplift. We wanted to tell them, "You're doing a great job. We're sorry you had to
get in their souls with your music."
That's correct.
Put it that way,
yeah, absolutely. The music was the vehicle, and we chose Mississippi and North Carolina because they have the worst laws on the books. And we thought, well, let's just go right into the belly of the beast. And Mississippi is really the worst.
You think of North Carolina, you think about all these laws about bathrooms and so forth. And you had some transgender people with you. And
we did.
Let me go to Chloe. Chloe, you were embedded in this. What memorable thing stood out in your mind?
so many moments, Michael. Speaking about transgender members, I had the honour of getting to hang out with one in particular, a guy called Tom Kennard, who I ended up doing quite a lot of storytelling for KQED and also for NPR about. And, you know, this is somebody who had a T-shirt that said, "You can pee next to me." And he was very keen to go into the men's bathroom in North Carolina and wear that, and it hopefully engender discussions. But it was really powerful to get to meet his mum, who had come all the way from, she'd driven, I think, 5 or 6 hours from Indianapolis to see him perform. And she had not heard him sing, and he's a deep bass, since he was singing soprano
right.
as a little person. Yeah, it was very powerful. So that was definitely one thing that will stay with me for a long time.
There was supposed to be a kind of mountain movement in Selma. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, Selma was a really amazing day. I remember we were in a big convoy, 6 buses. It was raining. There was a police escort. Yes, and we turned up at the Brown Chapel, which is very famous for the civil rights movement. And it was, you know, I think the start of this important march, you know, where the civil rights activists got together and then eventually went across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And we did that too. With our rainbow flags, everyone across the bridge singing. But before that in the church, there was this mountaintop moment where civil rights leaders and the choir, we all got together. We were singing. There was a lot of amazing conversation. It was very uplifting. And then coming out of that into the drizzle and seeing these young protesters, there was a small group, young African-American kids holding banners, basically anti-LGBTQ banners. And I stopped and chatted with some of them.
I saw one of those banners that said, "You were not born from homosexuals." I mean, in other words,
yeah. If it weren't for heterosexuals, you wouldn't be here. Yeah, I think right. it was something
worse
like
to that effect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also brings up a question I want to get to with you, Tim, and that is about really how much you were prepared for assaults or what kind of security you had.
Oh boy!
Because we think about that Baptist church and, you know, those characters from the Westboro Black Baptist Church who go around
yes.
with signs saying "kill
yes.
all fags," quote yep. unquote.
The only place that we had a bomb threat and a bomb sweep was at First Baptist Church of Greenville. Nowhere else but at that church. Yes, I will say that our board, of course, wanted us to be secure, and so we budgeted a large amount of money for police escort. We talked to local police, state police, even some FBI, just to make sure it was going to be safe. And exactly two weeks before we left was Charlottesville. And for people that don't understand the South, I grew up in the South, but who don't understand it, that was a picture that scared them to death. And so the board immediately met and doubled the budget for for security. And
well, wait a minute. Wasn't there also a moment early on in the film where there was a phone call that came in?
Oh, that man called us a lot, Michael. It was not a phone call that came in. He found
it
our number.
It was initially when things were being planned,
oh, boy.
I believe. Yeah.
Yes. And he really wanted to express his opinion about the perverts that were coming to the South.
And didn't one of the members of the chorus say, "No amount of singing can fix that"?
That's exactly right. I mean, here we're going on what would be mission tour, and it's like, yeah, that one's not going to get fixed.
So, Chloe, the people who came out, a lot of them were curious, obviously, but a lot of them were good-hearted people, right?
You mean came out in terms of the audience?
Came out in the audience, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were standing ovations. I think there was one.
Wasn't there one before they even began singing?
That's right. I remember that for 2 minutes.
Well, as it should be. I think an entrance, you know, of 300 gays is worthy of a standing ovation.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
just
it's not so much, you know, singing, but a detonation. I mean, we're talking about 300 people on stage. That's a big noise, and people reacted strongly to that. Tears, laughter, clapping, of course. Yeah, it was very powerful.
And here's a song, a rendition of Amazing Grace that the chorus performed at the First Baptist Church, which we just heard mentioned in Greenville, South Carolina. It's a poignant moment in the film that was done. And there you hear the celestial sounds of the Gay Men's Chorus right in the Deep South. By the way, they're going to be performing here at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco through the 27th of this month. And Chloe, can you describe the reaction to that different version of Amazing Grace that I never heard before?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the powerful things about this chorus is, you know, you have so many people on stage. They're capable of making this big, holy noise, but they are also capable of this gentleness, subtlety, quiet, sensitivity, you know? So you feel chills down your spine. I mean, I think that a lot of the people I spoke with just sort of were completely gobsmacked by what they heard. Because you have this contrast, I suppose, between this huge sound and the great sensitivity.
And I should mention a number of the chorus members had family ties, as Tim did, to the Deep South. And the tour was significant on a personal level for many of them. Have you tried, I'm talking to listeners now, to reconnect with a person or a place that once rejected you for who you are? You can give us a call now, or if you have questions about the Deep South tour. We'd indeed like to hear from you. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Let me repeat the number, 866-733-6786. If you want to be part of the program, you can also do that by getting in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have or comments to forum@kqed.org. Talking to Chloe Veltman, KQED news reporter, and Tim Seelig, artistic director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. And let's bring Terrence Kelly into this, who is artistic director for the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir Ensemble. Terrence, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome.
Oh, thanks, and good morning.
Good morning to you. Now, how did your group get involved?
Our executive director saw that San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus was going on tour to the Deep South, and the message that they were taking is the message of the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir. So he immediately called over and said, hey, we'd love to be a part of this. And from there on, it's history.
Well, talk about the history from your perspective. How many members of your choir went, and what were your feelings? You're going into what used to be Jim Crow apartheid country.
Oh, well, about 50 choir members went. Man, way to bring me on the show. Play that Amazing Grace right before I'm supposed to talk.
Well, did you get a sense of grace from going there?
That amazing grace wipes me out every time I hear it, mm-hmm. every time. Wow. Going to the Deep South with a gospel choir that's interfaith and 300 gay men singing together is, I think, just who I am. You know, it was wonderful. I was never afraid. I always thought it would be okay. I have family that still lives in the South. My parents are both from Texas, so I have family that's still in the South, and my sisters live in Florida, Texas, and Georgia, respectively. So I was ready.
I'm going to ask you something that's a little radioactive, but Pete Buttigieg, who is a candidate for the presidency of the United States, mayor of South Bend, Indiana, talked about the fact that, made a comparison between gays and African Americans, said they both experienced discrimination, and there was a lot of pushback on that, about that comparison. Can I get you to comment on it?
Heck, being both. Well, you know, one on one hand, one on the other. So I think they both get discrimination, but there can be a difference in it, because if you're white and gay, there's still some privilege attached to it.
Tim, you want to comment on that? Because I said, a lot of people thought that Buttigieg was making a kind of evaluative judgment there that shouldn't have been made.
Of course. You can't compare the two, really. Equal rights are equal rights. And the fact of the matter is, being gay, you can hide – well, I can't hide being gay, but most people probably can. Neither can Terrence. So – but, you know, I'm not going to get pulled over as a white gay man. And the discrimination that Terrence and the chorus of his chorus is so overt and physical, And ours is not always that way. Our fight is much more internal, and with the world that we live in, it doesn't. I don't think it hurts any less. I'm not sure, Terrence. You might want to comment on that. I mean, Terrence is who he is, and my struggle to come out was completely different, and certainly I was discriminated against. But I think there are differences. I think Pete is right on, though.
Want to respond to that, Terrence?
I think Pete is right on. But, you know, there is the additional, for those of us who are African-American, the additional level of prejudice just because you are African-American of color. So, and immediately, if one looks at, if Tim and I walk in the room, and somebody looks at us, they're not going to judge him racially, you know. So they're, you know, they see me and immediately, oh, there's somebody that I can attach my racism to. Hmm. And then, so the other part, the gay part has to become known, you know, it has to present itself. But being black, well, it's just there.
What did the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir do about security down there?
Well, we were together with the gay men's course all the time, and there were like twice I think that we really had big contingents of police protection. But it was a very safe trip. Not very much. We were much more warmly than we may have anticipated.
So the two choirs really bonded over the course of the tour, huh?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh, boy. So we had six buses, and, you know, Oakland with 50 people could have taken a bus, but no. We assigned buses so that they were among us. We shared the motels across the South, and we, as Terrence and I, were not surprised, but as one of the guys comments, we've had pecans at every meal. I'm like, well, it's not a pecan, it's a pecan, but whatever you think.
Let me thank you, Terrence, for joining us.
Different thing.
Terrence Kelly, again, Artistic Director for the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir. Good to have you aboard, Terrence.
Thanks, Terrence. Love you.
Thank you. Love you too, Tim.
And let me go back to Chloe Veltman, who was embedded, as we said, our own reporter here from KQED. This was set out, at least as I understand it, to really find out the capacity in this region for empathy. I'm not sure how you measure, what metrics you use, but let me get you to comment on that.
Yeah.
Was it mission accomplished?
Well, I saw a lot of empathetic moments. And I think actually in the film, you know, there are scenes which reveal this a lot too. And unexpected things where, you know, people from the Bay Area here were in kind of a bubble. And we kind of assume that a lot of people assume, at least, you go to the South and there's going to be a lot of hatred and people aren't going to like what's going on with this choir, these combined choirs singing. But, you know, in actual fact, I think a lot of us were schooled in that regard.
We were, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you didn't talk politics much, or did you?
Well,
because you came there when there was actually legislation going
that's
through.
That's right.
It was discriminatory.
No, we did talk legislation, and I can't keep from, like, talking politics from the stage. I'm fine with that. So,
but not even just on the stage. I mean, I remember in Jackson, I was running. I met a deadline. I was running to the Capitol to hear the choir singing on the steps of the state Capitol. This was right before House Bill 1523 was supposed to take effect, which is a law that you know, basically says that business owners of different kinds, people can discriminate on the basis of quote religious leanings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was running, I get into a cab, and the cabbie, guy called Terry Butler, I think was his name, as soon as he heard that I was a reporter from San Francisco embedded with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, his tone completely changed. He went from being a rather officious cabbie to saying, thank goodness you guys are here. I am so excited. I cannot tell you what it's like working in real estate when I'm not driving this cab and I have to pretend that I am, a good right-wing Christian fundamentalist, but I'm not. And
so,
I'm so glad
you got him to out himself.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, this is one of many moments, such moments, you know, where you felt this coming together of people, this sense of really needing to have these kinds of conversations.
And I want to remind listeners, the Gay Chorus Deep South is playing at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco through Saturday, November 30th. And a listener wants to know, Tim, who's the composer of that rendition of
Oh, my gosh, isn't that beautiful? It's an arranger who took this, and his name is Mark Hayes. And the first time that was sung was at the 9/11 service at the National Cathedral. And those of us who are musicians sat in awe. And now it's quite a staple because it's just so beautiful. But thank you for asking.
And let me bring some listeners on who may have things to ask. Jody, you're up. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to comment that, you know, we don't have to go very far, like all the way to the South, to really experience the ongoing, you know, discrimination, you know, as LGBTQ people. I just wanted to say, you know, I'm 47. I've been out since I was 13 years old. I've been through my whole series of stuff. But recently my niece came out. She went down to her first year at UC San Marcos in California. And when meeting her roommate for the first time, the roommate said, "Oh, my God, I didn't know I was going to be rooming with a girl who thinks she's a guy." And, you know, it was really shocking for her because she, like, you know, there's a lot of us, I think, who live in these sort of subcultural enclaves where we're sort of safe and we think everybody's gay-friendly, and they may be, but you start getting outside of sort of these bubbles that we live in, and discrimination is still really real. And it was really shocking for her because she just was moving through the world, like, safe and confident who she was, and then just kind of get smacked. To add insult to injury, she's also biracial. And this woman, the young girl who made the comment, was Latina. And just looking at those sort of struggles, and they're millennials. I mean, they're young people. They're supposed to be more open-minded during this age and this time. And but all of those factors still.
Jody, I'm sorry that your niece went through that, but it's a part of education, unfortunately, because homophobia, you don't have to go far out of the bubble. And sometimes within the bubble, it's there. It's ubiquitous. But what about differences that you perceived, I mean, outside the bubble, in addition to, I mean, this is a different region. The South has a whole different history. It's a whole different culture, civilization even.
Right. We saw the whole gamut from the very beginning with African-American trans woman who runs the ACLU Trans in Mississippi. Their headquarters is overspoken. And she is a hero and she is staying there and she doesn't want to go and she's fighting the good fight every single day. And we saw all of that all the way to the pastors that you will see in the movie who refuse to allow us to sing at their church, even though they purport to be inclusive. Those are delicious moments.
And they refuse because... Sodomites and that kind of stuff, biblical stuff.
So they have inclusion sort of in their church.
Are you talking about the United Methodist Church in Knoxville?
Well, that's one.
Yeah, there were a few, right? So I remember talking to those people, though.
Why did they turn down?
I can tell you, it's a great moment.
What did they say in terms of turning down?
So we met with the associate pastor and some lay people, and they were thrilled and excited, and we set the date. And then they got a new senior pastor who had been sent there to turn this inclusion thing around. The bishop was not so happy. So they got a new senior minister, and we had all this set up. And then we got a letter from one of the people who said, "I'm sorry, but the senior pastor has said that the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus."
And these are Methodists, because you're talking.
Those were Methodists.
Immediately assume Baptists and Evangelicals, but
correct.
You're talking about Methodists.
No, and the really good one was a Presbyterian. That was one of the absolute fabulous moments. I'll tell you that one, Michael, real quick. So I'm sitting in his office by myself, and he says, "Well, you know, we tolerate you," and I'm like, "Oh, you did not just say that. I actually did." And I was like, "No, I don't want to be tolerated because you can stab me in the back while you're hugging me." And he goes, well, you know, "We can accept you." And I'm like, "Okay, let's stop here." He started with hospitality. Well, we're hospitable. And then we moved to tolerance. And then we moved to acceptance. And I said, "Here's the deal. That's not good enough for me. I was a Baptist minister of music till I was 35. I know this game. And the point that we need to get to is that you can celebrate our uniqueness." And he just stares at me and goes, "Well, I haven't had the nudge to do that." It's awesome. And then he just stares me down like, that's the end of that.
Your personal story is a fascinating one, too, Tim.
Well, but
let me get another caller aboard here, and that's Mary waiting patiently. Mary, hi.
Oh. Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air, Mary. Hi.
Okay. The comment that I wanted to make, one form of prejudice that gays suffer that African Americans do not is in their own family. And that has
true.
To be
true.
Deeply painful.
That is true. That's a really good point.
Yeah, we thank you for that point.
Yes.
It's also, of course, gays, unless they were African American gays like Terrence, didn't have the history of slavery.
No
so, I mean, these things have to be somewhat separated,
yes.
I think, historically and sensibly. I know Pete Buttigieg probably has more clarity than any of the candidates in many people's minds, so there's that as well. Boy, it's really quite a story, and I think a story that people want to avail themselves of. I want to mention once again, the Gay Chorus Deep South is at the Roxy Theater. You can see the film in San Francisco through Saturday, November 30th. So you're going to do the international tour next. There was talk about you going to Cuba, wasn't there?
Right. And Cuba was the backup for China. We will. I just want to say one thing, that I think it has just changed at the Roxy, and there are shows through December 8 and 9. I think they've extended it, and I think it's on their website. And the only reason I know is because they asked me to do a Q&A.
Well, we'll try to find out. We'll
yeah.
put it on our website and
great.
Get that date correct. That was not confirmed by the publicist.
Yeah.
An
international tour. So I also wanted to go back to, I think it was Judy. We sing all over California. I mean, we do a Freedom Tour. We jump on a bus and go to Bakersfield. We sing all over the Bay Area. So we can't take tours like this. They're very expensive and, really hard to do. So that's going to be about every 4 years probably is a tour.
Well, that was a good way of maybe eliciting some financial support. If listeners like what you do, and there are listeners who have bags of money, come forward. It's a wonderful singing group, and congratulations again for
thank
this
you.
Tour. Chloe, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Let's go out with Hearing, the Gay Chorus of San Francisco.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.